Okay.
Yes. I was like, mm-hmm. I'm going to set this page for it. She blamed GPS at the old ACMCJC. That is a bitch. I blamed that.
Sarah was on.
I worked for that for last day. Oh, for GPS, I knew that. I knew that the day. I am basically the president.
Okay.
Oh my God, Matt.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Hey, you're absolutely fantastic.
Great. Okay. So.
Yeah. Hi, John.
Well, Pat.
Yeah.
So.
Hi, I'm Joe. I'm one of the undergraduates. Congratulations. Yeah. Joining the fun. Just right when we get out.
I saw you doing the email for the invitation.
I mean, I think we can always call me. We
have to call in.
Chris is coming at 5.
Oh, Chris is coming.
Okay.
Really?
So that's.
I need to actually listen.
We've got a big amount.
Okay, is it just me or
just friends? Okay,
and my
hi. Yeah.
So, usually I don't do anything with that other than just
yeah.
Trying to
But that's okay. Good. We need some distraction.
We were supposed to be actually. If you post dump with flavor, that is really good, but it's more blended. Flavor of rock fish.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's what puffin tastes like.
Okay, that's not good. Why?
It's frozen.
Maybe start over.
Yeah. When in doubt, turn about.
Turn around, turn about.
Start over.
Is it after dark?
I think it's protesting.
I think this is the time to protest.
So are all four newly appointed people? I think one except for Jenna, who's now in international student.
I don't think it was my experience.
You might just
require
to
do that. Hello. Hi there. How you doing?
Do you have any particular insight into this? So it looks like it's frozen. So this overlay is on top of the Zoom interface. And so I can't get out of this and get back in to be able to actually resolve. So we.
I mean, I think we tried.
Yeah, I've only used it on presentation mode. So.
Mm-hmm. And I've tried to, we shut it down and restarted. But I'm not necessarily sure, like, this functionality, how much it connects with this. Sometimes, because I've always, in order to get to do all of this other stuff with Zoom, I've always had to use it through here, and this was really just to get the presentation
started. Right, right.
Hi, how are you?
I'm terrible.
Because I'm terrible. Oh,
well,
they're not so close.
Oh,
right, they're right in the cupboard there. Any of them? Any?
I'll put them out.
That, those cups would be fine. It's all their name.
You could, but.
I got it.
Thank you. Well,
these are better.
Yeah, any of the cups. I often All right, so we need to get. Oh, well, now it's doing some kind of a testing. It's time to update the software.
Facilities and retired Marine from ROTC. So
great, thanks. Welcome. So the next we'll have any call for late additions to the agenda. Okay, seeing that there are no calls for no late additions to the agenda, we'll move to the approval of the meeting minutes. Refer to the January 30th meeting minutes.
Second.
Motion to approve the minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
There's been a second. Is there any dissent to approve the minutes? Seeing no dissent, the meeting minutes are approved. Okay, we will.
It is possible that Michelle there has the
time slot that Madeline actually had before they changed. And is going by that rather than.
Okay, which time slot
so
is that?
He would be here then at 5 p.m.
Okay, so it might be the case that Dean, I'm sorry, how do you.
Dean P.
Dean P.
Penyalver.
So Dean Penyalver is, he might be coming a little bit later than we thought he would. So in that case, I would actually ask that we amend the agenda to account for that and move the business of the day up in front. Okay. Good to know everyone agrees. Okay. So is there any dissent to doing that? Seeing no dissent, we will begin the business of the day. First is the request from the Office of the President. You can refer to UA Resolution 11. Anna and Jeremy, would you like to talk a little bit about this?
Sure.
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me get it up here. All right. So this is directly in response to our previous conversations around this, that we needed further clarification and documented information so that we weren't off of interpretations and assumptions. The exec committee met this morning with the president, got some clarification. I thought actually the meeting went really well, and probably we should have done this a little bit sooner, get reached out and just had this conversation. The result here is a clarification on the written statement that she made, which I found really confusing. And I think this makes it much more clear. What's being asked for is, we've already passed to the point of being able to use our documented process for reappointment. That's no longer an option. Now, that has zero documentation. There isn't a documented process. The argument from the president's office is that we should not use a wholly undocumented process for a two-year appointment, which she feels is too short and doesn't provide enough security for the JA's office. And what she's proposing is that rather than using any process for reappointment right now, we vote to extend the current term of the JA by 1 year, during 1 year from the end of this semester. During that time, we would make a commitment to working with her office to develop a documented, supportable process for reappointment of the JA that better matches HR practices and our peer institutions, and have that done by the end of this semester, so that come the end of the following year, when it is time for reappointment, we can use this documented formal process for reappointment of the JA. So that's what's documented here, and my understandings of the conversation that we had this morning.
Okay. Well, if you have questions or comments, just raise your hand, and I'll get you on the speaker's list. First, Matt, and then Marty, and then Richard.
So first off, thank you for bringing this forward. I appreciate it having to be in writing. As I mentioned in our last meeting, I think it's prudent. Again, you can't, discussing the theory really tends to become circular, so I'm glad to have this in writing. That being said, just looking at it, I'm a little bit confused. Like, is this us reappointing the JA for another 1 year? I mean, it's functionally reappointing it for another 1 year term. I guess that's a question. And to me, reading this is not clear. I'm also not clear looking at, for instance, some of the lines, what exactly we're doing with this. And because of that, I just want to know, like, are you looking to have this, are you hoping to have this passed today? Because I'm of the mind this should not be passed today, considering it has not, to my knowledge, been sent to the info listserv, was sent to the members 3 hours ago. I mean, obviously, there are functional realities, but this is a very large thing. In essence, this is, I think, also a going community concern. So I think I can get a discussion, but I believe that, frankly, I mean, I barely had time to review this. And I'm sure the CJC also is interested in looking at this, at the very least discussing it, considering this relates directly to the campus code of conduct.
Marty?
The question was also, is this resolution functionally seeking to reappoint the JA for another 1 year term?
Yes.
Okay. Have we received an appointment letter?
In response to your other question, Martha certainly hopes this passes today.
What did you say?
Martha certainly hopes that we will pass this today.
And the only thing.
Yeah, you can respond.
The only thing that I would add to that is, again, I think sometimes we assume the worst coming from the administration. I honestly think we've passed so far past the point of when we should have made a decision on this, that there is some tension to handling it quickly. I would also like to see sooner rather than later, but I also see your point. And I think that's really reasonable as well. So on one hand, I also wanted to add part of that conversation, because I was a bit uncomfortable last time we talked. Michelle Horvath is completely aware that this conversation is going on. She has been kept up to date with this conversation as it has progressed. So none of this is a surprise and none of this is a secret. Just so that we have that out there as well.
Yeah.
A point of information, has this been put out for community comment in any way, shape, or form?
No.
No, it has not.
Next is Marty.
Yes, I actually have no problem with seeing a one-year appointment, given some things that are implied by what this statement is. And I don't have a problem with it, partly because the difficulty that has been created by our not being in sync with the process that's described, has to be recognized by us, our office. And we're seeking a way of getting around that. I think appointing for 2 years now, or 1 year, is, let's put it this way. I think the 1 year is more consistent with our recognizing that we had a problem doing the reappointment at 2 years, or doing a reevaluation at 2 years. So I'm consistent with that. What's missing, it seems to me, is that the therefore be it resolved should also have a lot more language about how to set up a mechanism where the UA is in charge of developing the reappointment process. All we have in that is, in that regard, is the University Assembly and the Office of President work together to establish new documented appointment procedures that provides a long-term and more stability for the judicial administrator. I would say that clause seems to me to be saying that we need some help. We're not doing a good job. And that further underscores the fact that we didn't do the job. I would suggest that we reframe that and just say in the resolve, therefore be it resolved that the University Assembly will in the next month form or empower its current committee to develop a new process, and in the interim recommends the appointment of the judicial administrator for 1 year while that process plays itself out. And then say, in that sense, we could also say, if we want, coordinated with the president's office. I mean, I think it's nice to realize that the president has to appoint the person. But what it has here now is that the UA is saying, gee, we made a mistake. We screwed up. We didn't appoint somebody for 2 years. And so the president called that to our attention. We're trying to take some remedial steps. We need all the help we can get to get things worked out in a way that follows proper procedure. I know this is a long thing that I'm saying, but I think it's really important that we realize, okay, we made a mistake. That's pretty clear in here. Now what we need to do is, we agree with the president that a one-year appointment makes a lot of sense. We will do our job. And we will do it beginning next month and put in place an appointment process, and we'll seek the counsel of the president in the process.
Jeremy Renner, did you want to respond to that?
So, two things. I think a one-month time frame for actually having a finalized.
I didn't say that. I said begin.
Okay. I think we are beginning now with.
I don't see anywhere here that it says that we're beginning.
Okay. And we could adjust language for that as well.
I think in the therefore be it resolved, it should say, therefore be it resolved, the university concurs with the president's proposal. Just says, you know, the university assembly accepts the president. Moves to recommend the appointment of the judicial administrator for 1 year, and therefore be it further resolved that the university assembly will begin in the next month the process in consultation with the president's office, the process of establishing a procedure for reappointment of the judicial administrator. In whatever length of term seems appropriate. I wouldn't even say for a longer term. I would say in whatever length of term seems appropriate.
Is that a formal motion?
That's a formal motion to add to a resolve.
When it's
add to a resolve and so, to delete the or to rework the first resolve that to just say that the university assembly. What's the right word? Occurs in the
yes, I guess.
Moves to reappoint the judicial administrator for 1 year, and therefore be it further resolved that the university assembly will work in the next beginning of next month to develop a reappointment process for the judicial administrator for whatever period of time seems appropriate, whatever length of time seems appropriate.
Okay, I'm trying to write as fast as possible.
My fault for that.
It's okay.
Marty, just to check, because I helped develop some of the language in here, and I'm just trying to sort out we are setting a limit on ourselves of having this process finished by the end of the semester. Are you saying that you don't feel that that's significant, that we should also put a definitive when we start this process?
Where is it?
That's in the, is it not? I thought I put it in there. Establish a new document for us. My apology. I had intended to. I apparently had it in my mind that I'd done it, but I had not. So my intent was to because I agree with you that there should be a definitive. My intention was actually to set in by the end of this semester. We
it's
would
in
have
the whereases. It's in the whereases, and it's in the whereases that the president has proposed. But there's nothing in the resolve that says that we will. And that's my point. The resolved only says that we concur with the president's proposal to extend the judicial administrator's term. I'm simply saying that we should have in the resolves that we are taking the lead in establishing the procedure for, and I would say even amending the code in whatever way is appropriate if it is necessary to take in mind.
Yeah. I mean, so it's, I think you make a valid point. I just want to make sure that I can get all the language down.
I understand.
So it's a little tricky, but I think that that's a valid sentiment. So until I have like language that we can incorporate into this, I don't think that we should have considered an amendment.
Ask the rest of the assembly if they agree, then you and I can sit down afterwards and write what you think are the appropriate terms.
Marty, would moving from the whereas, line 17, the by the end of the current semester into a whereas clause that we are committing to complete the process by the end of the current semester, would that suit your needs or?
I have no needs. I'm just saying.
Okay,
I'm just saying simply that I agree that a 1 year period, it makes sense. And point for a 1 year period, but we should say that we're in control of the process of just working up a new, and that should be in the result.
And that brings to mind another point that I probably should have added into the language here, which is when we were talking with the president, one of the things that we talked about, and I didn't specify it here, about this regular feedback thing, which I think is in here, that there should be, as part of this, there's going to be a more formal process of providing feedback to that office during the duration of their...
Let's not complicate things. We're only talking about how long we're going to appear.
Yes.
Motion to suspend the agenda and return to our standard order of business.
Okay, there's been a motion to suspend the agenda and return to this.
While we're doing this, Marty, can you write down your proposed amendment and email it to Melissa, please?
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, so do that. Okay, so there's been a motion to suspend the agenda and return to the standard orders of business. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent. Dean Penyalver, I think you have the floor whenever you're ready.
Okay.
I know that you just walked in, so yeah. Sorry to rush.
That's all right. I was told 5 o'clock, right? And
I aired between setting the agenda and not realizing you had the time slot from Madeline Westall.
Oh, okay.
Still.
So I just I apologize if I was late.
No, that's on me.
I teach until 4, and where should I? Should I come over here? I apologize for my voice. I'm getting over it. I'm not sure what. Some hybrid of flu and cold. So I wasn't given any specific questions, so I thought I would just give you an overview of my subcommittee and what the process is that we envision, and then open the floor for your questions. This is initially a committee I was just going to be a member of, and then I was asked to take on the role of chair just after the new year. So I'm still a little bit getting up to speed on things, but we have met once since the start of the semester. We'll have our second meeting again later this week, and should have more to report after that. But I can tell you, kind of at the first meeting, what we did, we sort of mapped out our path forward and hopefully offer you as much clarity as I can about where we aim to head this semester. So the charge to our committee, our subcommittee, was to answer 4 questions. Has the university appropriately promulgated principles and regulations that address free speech on campus as well as prohibited discrimination and harassment? Are the campus code of conduct or other policies the right vehicles for establishing such regulations and principles? Are we sanctioning discrimination, harassment, and related conduct appropriately? Are the enforcement mechanisms clear and fair? And what legal mechanisms are available for the university to prevent, address, and counter situations in which protected expression on campus is harmful to those vulnerable to its effects? Our subcommittee is the smallest of the subcommittees in the president's task force. It's made up of 8 of us. It's 2 undergraduates, 2 graduate and professional students, 2 staff, and 2 faculty, including myself. Both of us are law faculty. And I think that was by design. It's the most targeted, most kind of narrowly targeted of the subcommittees on the task force, the most discreet charge. Our plan is really the basic time frame that we were given by the president was to have our work completed by the end of the semester. I think initially it was by the beginning of May, and I believe that's now been extended really through the end of the spring semester. So we're counting on the whole spring semester due to the fact that we weren't really able to start until after the new year. So given that, our plan for the semester is to spend roughly the first half, again, if we think of this running through the true end of the semester, so through, let's say, the end of May, spend the first half of that time period gathering facts. And that involves a number of things. We're looking at other university codes and comparing our university code to those of our peers. We're talking to... So a number of the questions in the charge related to not just the language of our code, but how it's actually interpreted and administered. And so we're talking to key administrators to understand how the code as it's written has been interpreted. We've lined up, and I'm not sure where the scheduling of these stands right now, but trying to line up meetings with the Title IX coordinator, the judicial administrator, the head of the bias reporting system, the dean of students, and then as well, there are a couple of law student groups involved with administering the campus code. There's a group called the JCC, the Judicial Code Counselors, who represent people accused of violations of the campus code. That their charge is broader than the charge of our subcommittee because they defend people from code violations that include things like academic dishonesty. But they also, you know, they defend people accused of violations of the harassment provisions as well, both within and outside of Title IX contexts. And then there's another group of law students who sort of advises people who bring complaints against other students. These are called the victims advocates. Now, their charge is limited to the Title IX context. But that we understand that to fall within the ambit of what we're looking at because harassment can be gender-based as well as racially-based. So we thought that they would give us good insight into the actual operation of the code and how it's perceived in terms of its fairness and clarity from the point of view of people involved in actual proceedings. And then we're reaching out to other interested constituencies on campus, including this group, and I'm meeting with Matthew tomorrow. I'm day to day on my calendar, so it's tomorrow. And then others as well. I have other student organizations who've expressed interest in this, and then we will be conducting, along with the other subcommittees, a survey of the broader campus community, and that will take a couple of forms. It's aiming for both quantitative and qualitative feedback on the range of issues covered by the charge to the various subcommittees. So, in our case, you know, wanting quantitative assessments of people's perceptions of the fairness of the code, its, you know, its suitability to the challenges that we're facing, but also soliciting kind of open-ended feedback about the process and the substance of our charge. And then once we've gathered the information, you know, our aim is to, what I understand we've been asked to do, is to draft a set of recommendations that could encompass or call for changes to the campus code, for new policies or changes to existing policies around issues of harassment and bias, or interpretive guidance on any of the above. So, you know, could say, well, no, the code is fine, but, you know, we're not interpreting it appropriately, and here's how it might be more effectively interpreted. So really any one or more combination of those three elements in a report that takes the form of a set of recommendations. Now, I understand there's a process for adopting any changes. So if we were to recommend changes to the campus code, those changes, if they were to be acted on, would have to go through whatever process exists. And I'm not, you know, I've never been involved in any such proposal, so I don't know what that process is, but my understanding of our charge is not that we would actually, you know, that nothing we do would have any, it's not self-executing, I guess is the way to say it. It is just a set of recommendations, and then how the president chooses to act on those is really a matter for her consideration, but kind of beyond the scope of our subcommittee. So that's our plan, and I'm certainly happy to get any questions or feedback, concerns.
So we have a couple people on the speaker. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah.
First is Joe.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll do the switch. So thank you so much for coming to explain subcommittee more and how it's going to interrelate with our process that we do through ours being in charge of the campus code of conduct. Specifically, I have concerns relating, obviously you weren't there to select the individuals onto your subcommittee. However, I do want to express my concern moving forward from an undergraduate perspective, being both undergraduates or freshmen. And it was shocking to me to see that because I don't know of many freshmen who understand the campus code of conduct or the current stuff, the current, you know, judicial process we have now. So that leads to I guess, extreme concern across the board, whether you be an undergraduate. I mean, I have to basically allow these two freshmen who hold no accountability really to the constituency they hold, except for the fact that they applied and they got on. And so I guess there's a lot of concern there, like what I view as, you know, do they actually understand undergraduate population? And I would err on the side of they probably don't. I don't want to assume anything about them, but it's a freshman. Like, at least from an undergraduate perspective, I would not trust them. But to really be able to represent my interests as someone who literally just read the code over summer break when I got this position. So I just want to express my concern. And is there any specific methods that the subcommittee is doing to resolve those concerns of undergraduates like mine? Like you said, student organizations, do you have a list lined up ready of those student organizations? Do you have any ways of like getting undergraduates who've been studying this, possibly 4-year, you know, senior undergraduates who devoted their life as being a pre-law? So I just kind of want to see if you can resolve those concerns. Obviously, I threw you like you just got thrown into this, but.
Well, I had no role, in choosing who's on the committee.
Yeah.
I can appreciate that concern. We're trying to kind of keep the avenues of communication as open as possible. And so I certainly would welcome any if people want to send us, written submissions, specific concerns about the campus code, we will read those and consider them. And the idea of this survey, I call it a survey, which sounds more closed-ended than we mean it to be, because it's a combination of a survey that develops quantitative responses from the campus community, but also really a request in a very open-ended way for just that kind of feedback. Mm-hmm. It's a small subcommittee. I think the charge is fairly discreet. So it helped to have, I think it's a helpful thing to have this small committee that in some ways is overweighted towards lawyers, I would say. I mean, because we're looking at the code and we're constrained by a broader legal context in terms of how the code can be changed, not just the process by which it can be changed, but the forms it can, I think, take. But we certainly want to, in formulating whatever recommendations we come up with, want to take into account the breadth of concerns that might exist among all the different constituencies, the undergraduate community included. So in some ways, it shouldn't really matter who the specific representative is on the committee from any given constituency, because we do hope to have information coming in from as broad as possible. We will be reaching out, in these requests for feedback to, specific student organizations, to at all levels, to the various governing bodies, and I think to members of the community broadly. So it'll go out to individuals, but also to groups over group listservs, this request for feedback. And I'm certainly happy to meet with individual groups that express an interest in meeting with me in person, happy to get emails from groups as well. So I take the concern. I don't know what I can do about it.
Yeah.
I didn't form it, but I was sort of impressed that they're freshmen that like wanted to do this. Because you arrive on campus and jump into this, it's just striking you as ambitious. But they're smart and energetic, and really what they'll be doing is assessing this information too. So there should be plenty of avenues for those concerns to get to.
First off, thank you for coming. It's been very good to see you again. To Joe's point, just really briefly, in my experience with Dean Lee, he's been an incredibly accessible dean in general, and I'd imagine, I know you're very busy, but I imagine that it's not something that's going to change. So I want to welcome you. As you said, we're meeting tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to that. I chair the university, the assembly's code and judicial committee. So in terms of the process, I'm not going to bore you with all the process of how a code will be changed if changed. I hate to give it to you if you'd like, but also Kevin Claremont, in addition to writing a great CIPRA book, wrote a good portion of our code. So he's an excellent resource who I'm sure would be happy to talk at length, perhaps too much length. But my question is primarily though, in terms of the CJC and the UA, we are looking at this on our own way as well through a parallel subcommittee and at a working group. So I'm just curious how you see, and obviously we'll talk this more tomorrow, but how you see our groups working together, because our goal is to not reinvent the wheel in so much as if we're going to try and solicit feedback to not fatigue the community or not unnecessarily cause friction when our goal, I believe, are relatively similar in terms of ensuring that Cornell has the best system possible while still ensuring freedom of expression, but there's not harassment and balancing a lot of complex issues.
Well, it'll be important to hear more from you what you all have in mind, and you know, tomorrow I gather this happened somewhat independently, right? Like you started looking at this earlier in the semester, and then the task force was formed, and there's overlap between this subcommittee and what you were already doing. It certainly leads to the possibility that we'll recommend something that is different from what you were planning. I think so speaking narrowly from the point of view of the subcommittee, you know, this the process that I've outlined is what we agreed on internally. And I would say your subcommittee is an important group that we would want to consult and whose views we would take into account in formulating our own recommendations. So that I just see that the work that you're already doing is an important input into our process. And I don't see any, unless you were either planning to do something much later or much earlier, I don't necessarily see a lack of harmony between our timeframes. Now, that said, I can't speak for the subcommittee, of course. So, this question, I think we've only met the one time, so I don't have everybody's kind of point of view clear in my head, but I think there's a broad consensus on the committee that exactly what you say is what we're trying to do, right? That we have these two values that are in some tension, and the question is how do you do honor to both values? And I don't know that there's a huge divergent range of potential outcomes, but there are meaningful differences, I'm sure. And so it's possible that, you know, we talk to you, we get your input, we bring it to the committee, and we end up somewhere totally different. But that will just be, you know, I think from the president's point of view, that will just be one piece of input along with the work that you're doing that she has to consider in deciding a course of action in terms of potential changes to the campus code. So. My hope is that these two things, that the work is not wasted, that actually that the work you've already done informs our subcommittee and enriches our discussion. And but at the end of the day, the subcommittee, I feel like, has to sort of stand on its own feet and kind of collectively come up with what we feel are our, you know, the most legally sound and legally sound and administrable set of recommendations that can, we think, give due weight to both of these. But I don't have any deep anxiety at this point about your process being totally different from ours. I feel like, you know, we'll learn more tomorrow, but I welcome the input because these are tough questions, and I think that the more smart people who are looking at them and kind of developing ideas, the better.
Thank you.
Charlie. On the membership thing, I mean, I'd rather have an enthusiastic non-expert than an expert who doesn't do anything. So I'm all in favor of the freshman. So I have a heard from Madeline that there are 200 or 300 failed policies out there, ones that have been cooked up over the years and have been struck down. That'd be great to see a collection of those. I think that'd be as illuminating as seeing things that are out there. Then I have a question, like, how do you assess something? So, like, I'm kind of a STEM engineering guy, and so what I would sort of do is maybe have 10 examples, 10 incidents, either real or abstracted, and then here's a sample policy. Let's see what they would say to each one of these 10 things, and you choose those 10 things so they span the space, you know, on campus, off campus, person versus group, group versus, you know, all the different permutations.
Yes.
Is that how you, the legal profession, is that how you would assess the quality of a proposed code change?
It's funny. Yeah, I mean, that's how a lawyer tends to think of these things too, right? I mean, we learn law through cases, and we think of the value of a rule is really revealed by its application in concrete situations. So what you were describing is exactly what I asked for actually at the retreat. When we first gathered was, you know, can you give me a series of examples? Because I'm having a hard time thinking about what different versions of, say, an anti-harassment provision might mean in the abstract. Like, it just doesn't, you know, you can look at a formulation and you know, it looks pretty good. But and honestly, it's the formulation is only as good as how it's actually apply. So there are the specific cases where you want to be able to rule in or out different kinds of speech and different kinds of reactions to different kinds of speech. But then there's, you know, but then there's always going to be leeway within a particular formulation. So for example, I'll just give one example, and I don't even know what the university's view on this is, although I know that federal courts have come out on different sides of this question. So the Title VII kind of workplace harassment provision, you know, the text of the statute talks about, you know, denying employment or equal employment opportunity on the basis of a series of categories. So, you know, the statute's pretty broad in that sense. It's then been interpreted by courts to encompass, you know, the harassment. Right, like harassment in the workplace then is the denial of an employment opportunity because it creates, you know, how can you really have equal access to employment if you're being harassed on the job, right? But that's a judicial gloss on the statutory text, and then the courts come out in different places on what harassment means, you know, but they all agree that harassment includes quid pro quo. Sexual harassment, let's say, right? So, like, you know, soliciting sexual favors in exchange for either beneficial or the non-adverse employment actions, right? Put that to the side. The other is the creation of a hostile work environment on the basis of sex, right? Okay, well, then the courts differ over whether that, whether a hostile work environment can be created by a single incident or whether it requires multiple incidents, right? I mean, so, you know, at each step on the chain, right, there's a combination of a text and an interaction of a text and an interpretive move. And then what concrete situations will be treated in what ways depends on which of those branches you're going to take. So we use the term in the campus code harassment, but, it's not... And I think harassment is broken out into these. It's defined by the code in a way that you can correct me if I'm wrong, because you've gotten into this deeper than I have. But hostile work environment, right? I mean, a hostile environment that is either extreme or pervasive.
It's the way the code. It's actually funny because it's a version of the code that is interesting. That it's the only place in the code itself where the words free speech appear. It says harassment is something that is beyond the scope of free speech, that is severe, pervasive, or severely annoying.
Severe, pervasive, right. And the use is or, right?
Yeah.
And I think in some federal courts, they say it's severe and pervasive, and some federal courts say severe or pervasive, and we use or. But what that means, does that mean, you know, is a single severe incident harassment? You know, that's an interpretive move. So, even under our code. So, you know, I don't know what the university's position on that is. Do we have a position? So we need to kind of get into that. But yes, I mean, the way to assess it to me is to look at what we... So the president's charge, let's go back to it, right, is have we appropriately promulgated principles and regulations that address free speech on campus as well as prohibit discrimination and harassment? Are the campus code or other policies the right vehicles? Are we sanctioning discrimination appropriately? Well, sort of look at the incidents that gave rise to the creation of the subcommittees, and how are they treated under the campus code? Like what, and are the, were those appropriately treated that way? Do they call for changes, or are we comfortable that the campus code was up to the task of dealing with these incidents that led to our creation? And I don't see it as a kind of, and I, because I don't really feel qualified to engage in a wholesale reassessment of the campus code across all domains of its application, but really just focused on a set of discrete incidents that led to our creation. There was another question at the beginning of your. I got caught up on your
my freshman joke.
No, I got caught up on your use of examples, but.
I mentioned it'd be great to see a handful of failed.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was so that it's sort of like the unhappy families are unhappy for all kinds of different all different reasons. I think campus codes, it's hard to necessarily learn lessons from the failure of other codes in the sense that almost all the reported cases involve a First Amendment. Litigation, right? And even the litigation involving the Stanford code was in effect First Amendment litigation, because under California law all institutions of higher education have to comply with the First Amendment. So now that's instructive, but we're not a public institution, so you can look at why the University of Michigan's code is found to violate the First Amendment, and that is a constraint that we should take seriously. But it's not a legal constraint on Cornell University.
Just to clarify the definition of the code, I actually looked it up. Prejudice harassment is to harass another person, one, by following that person, or two, by acting toward that person in a manner that is by objective measure threatening, abusive, or severely annoying, and that is beyond the scope of free speech. That's what's currently in the code.
The code is complicated, but there was another that severe or pervasive. Isn't that language in the code at some point?
I will take a look.
You can find the word pervasive.
You can just control F it.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think there are a couple other people to speak to this. Richard?
So, no, thank you for coming. One of the things that on the campus code committee we talked about, and this came up with connection with the Stanford Charter, was concrete examples.
Yeah.
The concrete examples that we, in our interactions and preliminary ones, we've emphasized that, tried to figure out what exactly it is in the concrete examples covered by that. So I just really encourage that. It turns out that's more complicated than it looks, because the way in which the code examples that people come up with that cause disputes are wildly different interpretations. Just
what the facts of the matter are. Yeah.
So but I think it's important to go through those and try and sort through how it's possible. One of the concerns for this assembly and for the campus code that came up again when Charlie says he used the word proposed, proposed changes in the campus code. Proposing changes in the campus code is really the university assembly's jurisdiction and responsibility. To say that, put it, recommend, okay, but propose, this is ours. What I would suggest is that when you get to that stage, it would be, I think, coordination, and you use the word consultation, but I think more than coordination and consultation, you should let us see what you're recommending before it goes to the president. So that it goes not through separate channels, but in fact, at least pay some attention to the this group's responsibilities.
I don't really see. I mean, did I use the word propose or
Charlie? Did.
Okay, I. So I'm not gonna. That's on Charlie. I see our goal as merely recommending. You know, it has no procedural effect. You know that it in a sense, anyone can make. You know, anyone can suggest something to the president, right? And the president can decide whether to act on that or not. And so I just see us as having been invited to recommend, based on our expertise, you know, to sort of assess and recommend changes if we think changes are merited. But you know, like I said, it's not in any way self-executing. It has no binding effect, and I think no standing within the process that exists for making changes. So whatever happens subsequent to our subcommittee's recommendations is really, you know, is governed by these existing processes and is between the, like I said, between the president and the various governing entities in the university. I can't commit to, you know, one thing that we've talked about on our committee is wanting to kind of have a coherent process for us, you know, within the committee to deliberate in an open, in a kind of open way amongst ourselves and come up with what we think are the best set of recommendations we can and in a pretty condensed time frame. So I don't know, you know, that there'll be an opportunity to consult about the actual recommendations apart from consulting along the way with groups about the questions that we've been given. But I can reassure you that, you know, we're not trying to insert ourselves in any way into the process for formally amending the code.
It's not you I'm worried about. It's the president that I'm worried about. If you can be invited to do something that, in terms of procedure and responsibilities to organizations, is incorrect. I mean, what you do, I mean, you'll carry this out fine and so forth and so on. My point is that at some point, you know, the invitation for you to do what you see is the right thing can be, in fact, procedurally intrusive on the responsibilities of this organization. That's the point.
Jeremy. So, a few things. First is, I'm very glad to hear that lawyers and engineers think a lot alike.
Yeah.
I really liked your phrasing of, let me see if I had it right, honoring both of our, I've lost the word now, values, honoring both of our values. And because we do have a bit of conflict between two things that are really important to us as a community. So I like that perspective of how do we do honor and how do we do justice to both of these at the same time? Where do we draw that line? Hearing a lot of the conversation that's going on, it sounds like a lot of the concern that folks have is around communication. So one of the things that I ask is the more information, we're obviously going to share through the CJC information with your committee, whether you like it or not.
No.
what I'd ask is the more communication that we can get early on throughout the process to the CJC, whether through the working committee or directly to the CJC, will, I think, ease a lot of the concerns of constituent groups and whatnot, because we'll kind of be involved in part of that process and understanding what's going on, and probably some of Richard's concerns as well, just having that kind of ongoing heartbeat on how things are moving along. So that would be my request, is any means that you have of just kind of keeping us in the loop as things go forward, I think will ease a lot of concerns and tensions that I've heard around the table. And thank you.
Yeah. Does anyone else have any follow-up questions for Dean P?
Just a note, the word pervasive actually doesn't appear in the code. What it, right above the definition I read, is a footnote out to 6.4 and says to violate these students, with the exception of sexual assault under simple assault, they're still under, they're still, you know, in essence, it's a bit of complex.
sexual assault was pulled out of the code due to the Dear Colleague letter, and that's a long discussion which I'm happy to have with anyone. But in essence, what was left over was protected status harassment in other areas, in essence, house and workplace, are still under the code, but the code says to harass someone in a way that would violate 6.4 is a violation of the code, and 6.4 uses the pervasive.
That's where that. Yeah, and they're using the federal, the Title VII standard, yes, effectively. Yeah.
Which actually brings to mind the other thing that I meant to say, and I completely lost it by the time I got around to this. You also mentioned the idea of clear language on how to interpret some of the thing, which is something the CJC actually is looking at, a holistic overhaul of the campus code, and part of that is because nobody can read it. And we need some of that clear language on how do you actually interpret this, and how do we make sure that the people who need to understand it can. Yeah. So I really appreciate that keeping that idea in mind of can we not only put the legal definitions in here, but give a clear understanding of how we expect this to be interpreted.
The complexity of it is impressive. Especially when you know, one thing that we did for our first subcommittee meeting was look at other campus codes, and it's incredibly detailed. I mean, ours is very, it's on the range of campus codes, it's very complex.
Anna?
Two things. I'd ask that you keep us in touch and let us know how we can help facilitate this going forward, since we do have some access to constituent assemblies and familiarity with how code gets implemented. And then I wanted to ask whether, since this impetus arose out of protests from the Black communities on campus, whether they've been involved with the subcommittee thus far, whether you've seen Pulse's draft language. It looks like there isn't necessarily Black representation on this subcommittee, and that struck me as a concern given what specifically gave rise to this effort.
I have the BALSA language was sent to me, so I have that. I will circulate it to the subcommittee. But we will have these avenues for broad input from lots of groups. So anyone who wants to send us feedback is, it's all welcome. It's a constitution of the subcommittee that I have, and I the process for forming it was broad, and I, it was a combination of what people were expressing interest in doing, I don't know what the criteria was. So I don't have anything to say about the constitution of it, because I just had no involvement in that. But I do think, through the consultative process, we can overcome any gaps in the committee. With such a small subcommittee, it was definitely going to be, there were going to be groups where not included. And I do think the representative, the broader task force is more represented than any individual piece, and then being the smallest piece would probably be least correct, especially given the weighting towards lawyers on the committee. And we'll be talking to the other subcommittees as well. So there's, I think we can hopefully overcome whatever blind spots we have due to our shortcomings.
Already been met.
I'll yield. So.
Oh yes. I'm sorry. I did, this is just an announcement to you two guys. I just sent you a copy.
I have forwarded it to the members.
And the other thing is. I'm sorry, I'm just part of the delivery, but I'm assuming that this is going to be, there's been so much litigation on hate speech, there's so much in campuses and speech codes, and that's why it's wonderful to have someone for the law school, Steve's status, and others, commenting on this in all of our deliberations in the and the Codes Judicial Committee in years past, and structuring the code and thinking about We had lots of participation from the law school to precedent seeking alternative codes and other things like that. So you understand that that's what we have to filter through when we consider anything that you bring to us. I think that's partly what our concern, maybe Professor Benzel was dealing with. So I'm assuming this could be easily very transparent and not cut and dry, but it's a simple process of just looking at all the precedents and the limitations and deciding what it is can be included or not. Am I getting something wrong here in thinking about that that way? This maybe I don't understand the process.
No, I think that's the. I mean, I. What do you? Well, it depends on what you mean by what can be included and not.
How things can be revised to accommodate if there are any revisions necessary to accommodate broader standards for what constitutes hate speech, or broader standards what constitutes speech code.
Yeah.
Because so much has been litigated about it, and there's so much in the it could be just. Is that am I naive about this? Is there much of a process that is necessary to go through?
Well, so I think there is, in the sense that, like I said, a lot of litigation has involved public institutions and in the scope of the First Amendment. And as a private institution not directly regulated by the First Amendment, I think we have a choice to make about how much of that we're going to take on ourselves. And that's
the public-private duplicity of, or not duplicity, the public-private dual status.
My understanding is that the university's position, and this has been borne out in the courts, is that we're a private institution.
Okay, sorry.
Across the board, that the contract units are just that, and are still private in nature. And so now there are ways that the Constitution and constitutional, in some ways this is a question for counsel, not for me, and we will consult with counsel, but in terms of making our recommendations. But I'm starting from the what I've been. What I understand the case to be, and at least in relation to the First Amendment, that it does not directly regulate. There are ways in which constitutional restraints can operate on even private institutions through funding, the threat of withdrawal of funding, so that you can, as a private institution that accepts federal funding, you can be effectively constrained into applying public norms, and that has happened in certain areas of the law, but I don't believe it's happened with respect to the First Amendment. So my understanding is we're not directly legally constrained by the First Amendment. Now, we could choose to constrain ourselves to the same extent as a public institution, and I think that gets to this question of is that what's required to give free speech its weight? Do wait, or is something else required?
Yes, well, it is getting back to the question.
That makes it a more challenging.
That's question. Amazing. That's an amazingly important issue to debate on the campus with everybody, and not to be decided in committee, but with the legal counsel and so forth, right out front. That is, what is our private institution? I mean, there are debates of that sort being going on in other areas, economic and otherwise, and voting rights and otherwise.
Sure.
So I would suggest that to us to try and dice that out in just for now.
Well, I don't see us as deciding anything. I mean,
I'm just saying the more straightforward and right out there that the campus decides makes a lot of sense. And in the sense, and learns, not just decides, but learns. That is, okay, what does private mean, in the area of free speech? One could, and debates it. That's what I'd suggest.
Yeah,
the more open and universally engaged on the campus, the better. for this.
I think that's right. And I, you know, our goal in terms of formulating any recommendations we ultimately make will be to be as transparent as possible about the trade-offs, right? I mean, here are the legal constraints. I mean, I understand that to be one of the questions, right? Number four is what legal mechanisms are available to the university to prevent, address, and counter situations in which protected expression on campus is harmful to those vulnerable. You know, so I take that to be a question about the legal landscape. And really the first question as well, you know, have we appropriately promulgated principles and regulations? What are our degrees of freedom? And then within those degrees of freedom, have we struck the right balance? Yes. Yes. You know, we wanted to distill this down into two simple questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, so it seems like we've run a little bit over, but I think that this was really important. So thanks very much for coming.
Thank you.
I think that, you know, as I'm sure that this discussion has shown, you know, we also like to think a lot about the campus code of conduct.
Sure.
And make recommendations. And so I would definitely, you know, encourage you to continue to be really open to consultation with members of the university assembly.
Yeah, and I can offer this, and I'll qualify this as just, you know, the like I said, I speak only for myself. You know, the committee is going to, what we do, we will do, you know, maybe not by total consensus, but by our own internal decision-making process, which I hope is as close to consensus as possible. I'm happy to come back and meet with you all again as the semester goes on. You know, whether I can, you know, share what the committee's deliberations are, you know, I think it's going to be up to the committee in a sense, not up to me personally. But I'm certainly happy to continue to consult with you throughout the process. And I, you know, hope that we'll, that whatever we do will be additive and not in any way, you know, run counter to your own deliberations.
Yeah, cool. Thanks. All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Feel free to have some food if you want.
Oh no, I gotta go home and
that's okay.
Thank you.
Welcome to stay, but that's okay. Okay, so we'll now move back into the order of business that we were doing before, which was the discussion regarding UA resolution number 11. And I think Marty actually sent a proposed amendment to the resolution out, and then Annie forwarded that out to everyone.
Yes.
So yeah, but not everyone has a computer, so
not everyone has. So then I'll read it.
Well, I could do that.
Okay, so why don't you read it and then I can repeat it.
All right, and you folks can follow it by just looking at resolution 11, and I'll tell you where it is. I've made suggestions. So, starting with line 4, Title 2, and then everything is the same. Expiration lays that out, and going, that's all the same down to line 10. And line 10, I propose the following: whereas this provision of the code has not been adhered to in considering the reappointment of the current judicial administrator. In other words, I've left out the language that says for many years we haven't done things right, and also I've just located it specifically in this judicial administrator's term because that's what we're trying to deal with. And then we skip everything in lines 13, 14, 15, and 16, and go down to line 17 and say, whereas the president of the university has proposed that by the end of the current semester, the university assembly and the office of the president will work together to establish an appointment / reappointment procedure that provides stability for the judicial administrator's position that is more in line with HR practices and peer institutions and that better acknowledges far-reaching campus-wide importance of the role. I left that in there just as a, even though we don't have lines 13, 14, 15, 16, I thought that that language was, you know, we could also strike portions of that, but that seems like it's...
So you're striking 13 through 16?
I am striking 13 through 16. I can give you this. I don't know whether I, but anyway.
And then,
and, Then we strike just
before you go on, just to understand. So from line 17 through 21, the only thing you want to change is appointment slash reappointment.
No. I have I left out documented, and I just I can read it again to you. But you have it there, don't you?
Yeah. Just...
Oh, I'm sorry. But I'll read it again. So line 17 through line 21. What I have 17 through 21 is, whereas the president of the university has proposed that by the end of the current semester, the university assembly and office president will work together to establish an appointment slash reappointment procedure.
A new appointment?
So we're scratching new.
Yes.
Okay, so we would say to establish a appointment slash reappointment procedure.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
So scratch out new documented.
Do you want me to put this on the projector so we can see it?
That would be lovely.
Yeah. Do you know how to do that?
An appointment slash reappointment procedure that provides stability for the judicial administrator position, that is more in line with HR practices and peer institutions, and that better acknowledges the far-reaching campus-wide importance of the role. So my point in leaving those things in there, even though they're not mentioned in line, I've taken them out in lines 13, 14, 15, 16, is that it reflects the president's comprehensive view of what's going to be accomplished without getting into that we screwed up by doing all this other stuff. And then we can skip down to line 23, and what I have here is the same. In other words, lines 23 through 25 are exactly the same. And then we switch, skip down to line 27, which is the resolve. And that is what I've suggested is, be it therefore resolved, the University Assembly concurs with the President's proposal to extend the current judicial administrator term until June 22nd, 2019. And then I add another resolve, which goes as follows. Be it further resolved that the University Assembly Executive Committee and leadership of the Codes and Judicial Committee, in consultation with the President, will, within a month of the President's acceptance of this resolution, initiate a process for evaluating and, if necessary, revising the process described in Title II, Article II, Section A, Subsection 3 of the Campus Code of Conduct for appointment and reappointment of the judicial administrator. So my second resolve then, it reflects the cooperation with the president's office, and I take the executive committee and the Codes and Judicial Committee leadership will be able to, you know, negotiate that the establishment of the process, reframing the appointment process.
I second the motion to amend.
Yeah, I was going to ask if anyone would second the motion to amend. So someone has seconded the motion to amend, so we will now begin discussion on specifically the amendment. First Anna, then Matt, then Richard.
I removed the question, honestly.
Dissent?
Okay.
No. If there's dissent, to that.
Okay, so is there a second? All right, there's no second. So next
I'll second it, but I was first on the... So I just want to protect my place, but I second this.
Okay, so there's been a second to move the question, so we'll now move into debate about whether or not we're ready to close debate on the motion. So we're debating about whether or not are ready to vote on this amendment. So first is Jeremy.
So before we can vote on this, there are a couple of minor changes that would need to be made to the amended version. They're not substantial, so I don't think what we're further resolved would need to be finally resolved if it are formatting properly.
Move this with the formatting changes.
Well, it's not just formatting. That's actually a language, so I didn't want to just assume that was okay to do. But other than that, it doesn't look like that. I think it's actually, I don't have any problems. Yeah, okay. Other than some minor adjustments to fit proper formatting and language.
Okay, so we're still in discussion about whether or not we're ready to vote on the amendment. Matt?
I think that this merits discussion currently on the mic. But my question was, I was curious to discuss why we're looking at the regular process with reappointment. We have the process, clarify procedures with the office of president about how we proceed for appointment. I'd happy to share with the assembly at some point, but it turns out the issue here is reappointment. Look at reappointment. The president clearly did not accept that, but it seems like, as an echo, sorry, but it seems like there's a, I'm curious why we're
getting into the entire avatar, we only need to really look at the process.
And I think that's a direct discussion.
Okay, so this is just whether or not we're ready to debate. Yeah, so his point is valid. Jeremy?
I'm withdrawing because we need to get past this logistical hurdle.
That's
what we're moving on.
That's right. Okay, so if there's no one else who wants to speak on this, then we're going to vote on whether or not we are ready to close discussion on the motion. So if you, to amend, this is just a motion to amend. So if you're in favor of closing discussion on the motion to amend and voting on that motion to amend, like you're ready to vote on it, raise your placard. You're ready to vote on Marty's motion. That's what you're voting on. You're just ready to vote on it. Okay. So we have Matt, how do you vote? Okay. If you are opposed to closing discussion, want to continue debating? No one? Okay, if you'd like to abstain. Craig abstains. So by a vote of 11 to 0 to 2, the motion passes, and we are ready to vote on Marty's motion. So now we're going to vote on Marty's motion. Okay, bear with me on this. So if you are in favor of Marty's motion to amend, adopting that into this resolution, please raise your hand or placard. Okay, if you are opposed to Marty's motion to amend, please raise your hand or placard. And if you would like to abstain on Marty's motion to amend, please raise your hand or placard. Okay, by a vote of 10 to 0 to 3, Marty, your amendment passed. So that is now being incorporated into the resolution as written. So with that, we can move back into the original discussion on the resolution as a whole. So everything is now fair game to talk about. I didn't really get a speaker's list because we kind of just immediately started with that. But I think Richard was first on the speaker's list
before. Next in line before there was interruption. So I just have some questions. For this original text of the resolution, who was the author?
The exec committee was, we bounced it back and forth on the exec list.
So you wrote it. I mean,
yes, collectively.
And then the president saw it?
Yes, we actually asked that because we wanted to be sure that we had interpreted her words correctly.
And then were there changes made?
A grammatical error.
Because automatic corrections corrected one of my words, yes.
The second question is, what transpired in the meeting? I mean, you met personally.
Yeah, I think I started with that. I'm more than happy to give them a...
Yes, I think, okay. I think that's a good idea.
Sure. So we sat down to talk about this. The primary concern that we started with was that we did not feel that the written description of her response to our changes to the reappointment process were sufficient to vote on a proposed one-year extension to the term. So what we were looking for is a documented and clear explanation as to why she was making this recommendation so that we could bring it in a written form to the assembly. She spent about a half an hour with us talking over her reasoning behind it, which I think is detailed pretty well in the resolution, which is essentially that we currently have a documented process, but we don't use it. That document, we're past the point of being able to actually use that documented process, and furthermore, that process for a two-year appointment she felt was unsatisfactory for our JA because it didn't give enough stability to that position. She's actually looking for a longer position term that's more in line with other professional positions at that level. We can't do that right now, though, and what she's asking for is this one-year extension, rather than voting on a reappointment right now, a one-year extension to the current term so that we can hash over by the end of this semester reappointment process and an appointment process for a JA that is more in line with HR policies and more in line with our peer institutions for JAs that provides her with a little more stability, a little more, a little longer term, so that it's not as much turnover.
I would add to that that she still pushed back very hard against making this just a two-year
yes.
term while we rewrite code. She did not really, the part where we had proposed changes to the code for this and she rejected them earlier this year did not come up. She's very adamant that we need something by the end of the semester.
Her statement was that waiting 2.5 years to apply a formal, better process for the JA seemed unreasonable. And I tend to agree with her that it's artificially extending that additional time when it does seem apparent that's poor practice, at least in my opinion. That's my personal opinion. It has nothing to do with anything other than that. But what this means is that we have till the end of the semester to make changes to this process, to make them in collaboration with the president's office, but not controlled by the president's office. We are in charge of making those adjustments. Once we have come to something that we find satisfactory, and I would agree includes a longer term than 2 years so that we can have a better reappointment process that doesn't occur every year, then we can apply it very next year to the current JA position. And then we hold our whatever process we've developed there, we use that to make that reappointment.
So here, the three of you were at this?
Us three.
Yes. So you three were there. This is presented as your text, but you wrote it after the meeting with her.
Yes.
And then Joel and she signed off.
Yes, but you wrote it after knowing, as you say, Hannah, that she wasn't going to accept a two-year thing. Personally, I'd like to hear from Jeremy, and I'd like to hear from you and Gabe what you think of this process. I mean, it's going under your name as proposed to us. It's not really, so I see it coming from you. It's coming from almost, you know, this is the only thing Joel said. But I want to know how you feel about that. So Anna, Gabe, I want to know.
Well, I'm the impartial chair.
Can we unchair you for a second?
The problem is that would go all the way through the exec board and write out the other end.
Yeah. So I'm going to stay impartial.
Really, you impartial.
And Anna, what do you think? Speak.
I think what I can relay is that Gabe did the work of drafting this on very short notice, so many thanks to him. I am not entirely complacent about this. I have personally some serious reservations about how she is trying to make what is essentially a prosecutor less accountable to the community. And that may be a misrepresentation of her intent. I also am concerned about our schedule for the remainder of the semester. I've been holding off today on emailing out. I have a document of a hypothetical calendar and invited speakers, but I don't know if this is on it or not. All that said, given the stakes, I would pass this today so that we are not playing football with someone's job, and yet there are real reasons to be concerned about this. So I would almost, as it is now, abstain, because I'm not sure what the right course is.
So you would abstain.
I'm
going
to abstain.
So one-third executive committee. Well,
and just so that it's clear, because this question came up before, while having the president's office as the stakeholder in a resolution is a little bit odd, having conversations over wording in a resolution with a stakeholder is not unusual at all. So the process by which this resolution came about is not actually unusual, other than the stakeholder happens to be the president's office in the JA. I don't feel uncomfortable with it, particularly once it was made clear that Michelle is entirely aware all of this is going on. That made me a little more comfortable with the discussion. And really, the idea of extending for a year and then reapplying a better designed process that we design doesn't bother me at all. So I would go with it as written. But again, I'm only one person and only one vote. So.
So next is.
Thank you. And I just want to start by thanking the executive committee for taking the time to do this. I would argue, one of the most, if not the most important duty of this assembly. And I agree that we are dealing with some job here. That being said, I mean, I'm a little ambivalent in the resolution. I received it, this case going on a few hours ago. And my big contention today is that this should not be voted on today for a whole host of reasons. I mean, to quote from President Pollack's response to UA Resolution 4 when we proposed a change, she said, and I quote, "The code, as you know, touches all parts of our community. It is therefore critical when developing proposed changes that there be full community involvement consistent with the UA Charter." And in essence, she was concerned about our efforts of public outreach. And therefore, that combined with our own bylaws saying we should have public comment where practical and appropriate, I believe this should not be passed today. I intend to motion to table it after we move through more discussion, perhaps because we're running out of time. But because my question really is here, this is, in essence, if we are functionally reappointing the JA, I find it concerning there is not a single person who's not associated with the assembly in the room. There's no Sun Reporter. This was not we did not notify the campus community we were reappointing the JA. We generally do so, provide notice so that the community can come and say, something has happened you should be aware of. And in this case, the term runs through June 22nd. If Michelle is on board with this, waiting one res- I mean, I'd like the CJC to look at this, because I know we've considered a number of iterations of code changes related in this area. I actually, when I convened the JA search process last time, I actually have a document from Vice President Molina we had put together about procedures for how the UA would approach reappoint. One of them was allowing for more public comment, and it's a long discussion that I'm happy to have. But really, just looking at it, I think this resolution, I think Marty's amendments were actually spot on. I commend them and I support them fully, but I don't believe this needs to be rushed through. We have the time. It's our standing procedure that we wait unless it's absolutely pressing. The president, and I've told prior presidents and the administration, though even those who have not changed, that we are a deliberative body. Our goal is to solicit community input. I think this needs to be put on our website in the amended form, open it for comments, and we need to make sure that people know we are A, reappointing the JA, B, bending the rules, and C, given the opportunity to comment, support it, oppose it, or do whatever, instead of putting this through on a resolution that, through no fault of the executive committee, was released 3 hours ago, was never sent to the info listserv. As far as the rest of the community is concerned, this resolution doesn't exist. And that's okay, we're talking about it, but to me, that means we shouldn't vote on it today. And with that, I don't know who else is bigger than this. I know we're at 6 o'clock, so I would motion to table it then.
I second.
There's been a motion to table. There's a second. Is there any dissent to tabling the resolution now? Okay, there's dissent, but we can't move into discussion on a motion to table. It's non-discussable.
So majority vote tables. If you're in favor of tabling the resolution, please raise your hand or placard. You are opposed to tabling the resolution. And if you'd like to abstain on tabling the resolution. Okay, by a vote of 13-1-1, resolution number 11 is tabled for the next meeting.
Motion to table resolutions 9 and 10 and adjourn the meeting.
Second. Okay, there are motions to table the resolutions and adjourn the meeting. Is there any dissent to adjourning the meeting and tabling those resolutions? Seeing no dissent. Is adjourned and those resolutions are tabled.
All of you reports, Marty was literally.
It's a lie. I emailed you.
Yeah, okay.
I sent you my update.
Not...
Thank you, Marty.
My update, we passed two resolutions. That was the update.
Email it. Email it.
Yeah, guys, just if you have things that are important, email them to the members list. It might be surprising.
The other words, like the comments that we were going to make today, that I wanted to ask, I can let all of you know.
Yeah. Oh, look, it's like going well.
That was Joel 2 years ago. That actually. I want to say, okay.
Just, we're over here. Trying to push everyone. I'll cry for Gabe later.
And
it's a meeting on time. is that what's run through the GPSA? Oh, we don't have jurisdiction over that. Like, would you want to? Because I was thinking. But like on the vein of that, like I was thinking. So I mean, like it's kind of on the same vein. So yeah, yeah. Send me the proposal.
Why?
It's so cheap.
Because there's no money. I know. But
I actually, this is really to get us.